"It is best now that I should awake," thought Jacob. And even as he still thought to see the god swing himself up from the stone and vanish, so that movement and vanishing were the same, he found himself lying under the starry night beside the sheep pens. His dream of Anubis the jackal soon faded. It returned into his simple recollection of the experience of his journey, and he remembered it, after a while, only thus. But a faint melancholy, pleasant to feel, lingered still a while in his soul, in that Nephthys, wrongfully embraced, had yet sought and mourned with Isis, and the bereaved one been cherished and supported by the wrongly begot. The Wedding. At this time, Laban and Jacob often took counsel together over the approaching event and the nuptial celebrations, and how Laban in general thought to hold the feast. And Jacob learned that his father-in-law had ambitious plans, and meant to celebrate regardless of expense. "It will cost me," Laban said, "a pretty penny, for there are now many more mouths, and I must feed them. But I shall not rue it, for lo, trade is not at all bad, rather fairly favorable in these times, thanks to many circumstances, among which we should mention the blessing of Isaac. Therefore it is I can pay for more labor in the court, and have bought two maids in addition to that lazy Iltani, and they are quite seemly wenches, named Zilpah and Bilhah, and on the wedding days I will give these to my two daughters, Zilpah to Leah, my eldest, and to the second, Bilhah. And at the marriage will the maid be thine, and I will give her thee as dowry, and her price shall be reckoned as two-thirds of the mina of silver, according to our contract." "I embrace thee in thanks," said Jacob, shrugging his shoulders. "But that is the least of it," went on Laban, "for all the feast will be at my sole charge, and I will invite people on the Sabbath from far and near, and have musicians who shall play and dance, and I will lay two bullocks and four sheep upon their backs, and comfort the guests with drink until they see all things double. All that will be a heavy charge, but I will bear it and not pull a long face, for is it not my daughter's wedding? And besides, I have in mind to make the bride a gift, that she may wear it, and it will rejoice her heart. I bought it long ago of a traveler, and it cost much money, and I have kept it in the chest. A veil for the bride to shroud herself in, that she may be holy unto Ishtar, and a consecrated one, whose veil also thou shalt lift. It may have belonged to a king's daughter in times past, being the maiden garment of a daughter of princes, so artfully is it embroidered throughout with manifold symbols of Ishtar and Tammuz. But she, the spotless one, shall veil her head in it, for immaculate is she, and shall be like one of the Enitu, like to the bride of heaven, whom each year at the feast of Ishtar the priests at Babel lead up to God before all the people, up the steps of the stairs and through the seven gates, and take from her some piece of her garment and her ornaments at every gate, and at the last gate her shame, and they lead the holy maid naked into the uppermost bedchamber of the tower Etemenanki. There she receives the god upon the bed in the darkness of the night, and exceedingly great is the mystery." Said Jacob. For Laban opened wide his eyes and spread out his fingers at the sides of his head, and put on an air of sanctimoniousness that in his nephew's view suited him not at all. Laban continued, "Of course, it is very fine and lovely when the bridegroom hath a house and court of his own, or is held in great esteem in the house of his parents, whence he cometh in great pomp to fetch the bride and to lead her in procession by land or by water to his own place and his inheritance. But thou, as thou knowest, art but a fugitive and homeless man, fallen out with thine own, and sittest with me as my son-in-law, and I make no complaint. There will be no bridal procession by land or water, and you will sojourn here after the feast and the nuptial night. But when I have come between you and touched your foreheads, Then we shall do as is the custom of our land in these cases, and lead you with singing round the court and into the bridal chamber. Thou shalt sit there upon the bed with a flower in thy hand, and await the bride. For her, too, the spotless one, shall we lead round about the court with torches and singing, and at the door of the chamber we put out the torches, and I lead the devoted one in unto thee, and leave you, that thou mayest hand her the flower in the darkness. Is that the custom and lawful? Asked Jacob. Far and wide, thou sayest it, replied Laban. Then will I also approve it, responded Jacob. And I assume that there will likewise be a torch burning, or a little lamp with a wick, that I may see my bride when I hand her the flower, and also afterwards.
Be silent, cried Laban.
Would I might know what thou hast in thy mind with thy unchaste speaking, to speak so before the father, to whom it is moreover painful and bitter to lead his child in unto a man that he may uncover her and sleep with her. At least in my presence hold thy lewd tongue, and restrain within thyself thy over-great lustfulness. For hast thou not hands to see? And must thou also swallow up the spotless one with thine eyes, to sharpen thy lust upon her shame and her maiden trembling? Have respect before the mystery of the high tower.
Pardon, said Jacob, and forgive me. I have not meant it so unchastely in my thoughts as it soundeth in my mouth. Gladly would I have looked upon my bride with my eyes, but since it is far and wide the custom to do as thou sayest, I will be satisfied for the time.
Thus the day of the fullness of splendor came on, and the nuptial feast. And in the house of Laban, the prosperous breeder of sheep, and in his court, there was a slaughtering and a seething and roasting and brewing, so that everything steamed, and all was bustle and noise, and all eyes watered from the smoke of the fires that burned under pots and ovens. For Laban was saving of charcoal, and heated almost altogether with thorns and dung. And the master and mistress and all that were in the house, including Jacob, hurried on the work and the servants, to make hospitality for so many and to prepare the banquet. For the wedding would last 7 days, and for all that time the supplies must be inexhaustible of cakes and buns and fish bread, of thick soups and plantains and milk dishes, of beer and fruit juices and strong waters, not to mention the roasted mutton and joints of beef. Else shame and mockery would be the portion of the household. And as they worked, they sang songs to Uduntamku the Fat, the god of the belly, the presiding deity of feasting. They all sang and composed them, Laban, Adina, Jacob, and Leah, Iltani the idol, and Bilhah and Zilpah the daughter's maids, Abcheba the 20-shekel man, and the latest acquired slaves. Laban's sons, in their little shirts, ran boisterously among the press, slipped on the blood from the slaughtering, and befouled themselves, so that their father wrung their ears, and they howled like jackals. Only Rachel sat still and idle in the house, for she might not see the bridegroom now, nor he his bride, and examined the costly veil, her father's present, which she should wear at the feast. It was splendid to see, a magnificent specimen of the arts of weaving and embroidering. It seemed an unmerited piece of good fortune that such a thing should have found its way into Laban's house and his chest. The man who let it go so cheap must have been greatly pressed by circumstances. It was large and broad, a garment and overgarment, with wide sleeves to put one's arm in at will, so cut that a piece of it could either be drawn over the head to cover it, or else wound about the head and shoulders, or else left to hang down the back. And the maiden garment weighed uncertainly in the hand, for it was heavy and light at once, and of unequal weight in different places. The background was of the palest blue, woven thin and fine as a breath of air, a misty nothing to be squeezed together in one hand, and yet weighted heavily everywhere by the embroidered pictures which covered it with brilliant, glittering colors, carried out in close, fine work, in gold and silver and bronze, and every imaginable shade, white, purple, rose, and olive, likewise black and white, all blended together like paintings in bright enamel. and such clever pictures and designs. Here was Ishtar Mami, in various shapes, a tiny nude figure pressing milk out of her breast with both hands, the sun and moon on either side. Everywhere the five-pointed star was repeated in varying colors, signifying God. The dove, the bird of the mother goddess of love, was woven most often in silver thread. Gilgamesh, the hero, two-thirds god and one-third man, was displayed strangling a lion in the bend of his arm. One recognized the human-scorpion pair, who, at the ends of the earth, guarded the gate through which the sun goes down to the lower world. One distinguished various animals, sometime paramours of Ishtar, and transformed by her, a wolf, a bat, the same who had once been Isulanu, the gardener. But Tammuz, the shepherd, was represented by a brilliant bird, the first partner of her lust, to whom she had decreed weeping year for year. And there was not lacking the fire-breathing bull of heaven, whom Anubis sent against Gilgamesh because of Ishtar's baffled longing and perfervid plaints. The garment slipped through Rachel's hands. She saw a man and woman sitting at both sides of a tree, stretching up their hands to the fruit, while a snake rose up behind the woman's back. And again there was embroidered a sacred tree with two bearded angels on either side, touching it with scaly, masculine cones to make it bare, while above the tree of life the female emblem hovered, surrounded by sun, moon, and stars. And likewise there were sayings woven into the veil in broad-pointed signs, lying down or standing straight or slanting. Rachel made out, "I have put off my coat. How shall I put it on?" She sat and played with the bright-colored weave, the splendid garment and veil. She wrapped it round her and turned herself about in it. She found new ways to drape its picture-book transparency. Thus she beguiled the time while she waited, and the others prepared the feast. Sometimes she had visits from Leah, her sister, who also tried the beauties of the veil upon her own person, and afterwards they sat together and caressed each other with tears. Why did they weep? They alone knew, though I might go so far as to say that they had different reasons. When Jacob sat and mused with swimming gaze, and all the tales that had written themselves in the lines of his face and weighed down his life with their dignified burden came back and were present in his mind, as they had been on the day when he and his red-haired twin had buried their father, then there was one day and one story which possessed beyond all others this power of presentness, having inflicted upon him a defeat so devastating to his senses and so humiliating to his feeling that his soul for long could not shake it off, and only regained faith in itself with the advent of a feeling that was like a rebirth and resurrection of those shamed and shattered ones. Present, I say, before all, was the story of his wedding day.